Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by Southern Cross Austereo. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Robin Hicks.
This week,
digital talent, who gets it?
This network takes its responsibility to accuracy extremely seriously, and we sincerely regret misleading you, and we're totally committed to making sure it never happens again.
Faking it. Nine's chopper cropper.
It has been an incredible 10 years that I have spent here working on this breakfast show. I have loved it more than you could even imagine.
American Duels move on from breakfast and Mix gets the Circle Girls.
In TV, Rafters makes a strong return. With us today in the studio is the CBS Interactive podcast producer Alice Terlikovsky.
Hi, everyone.
And head of digital at Edelman Australia, Matthew Gain.
Hello there.
Now, Matt, welcome along to the podcast. I think it's your first, trip to the podcast studio. Not a bad year for you guys so far.
A few
wins, eBay, Kmart.
Yeah, no, it's been a really good year. We've grown a lot and learnt a lot along the time, and yeah, it's been a fun ride.
And I guess I sort of think of you as having new management with, but I guess Michelle's probably been there more. That Michelle Hutton's been there more than a year now.
Yeah. Or? So it's funny. So Michelle, myself, and our GM in Sydney all started on the first on the same day, 1st of June.
And you were Michelle's first hire. It was her who recruited.
Yeah,
you?
We all started at the same time. So yes. Alex and I started at the same time. So we were her first hire.
So does it feel like it's just almost like starting a new agency, so to speak, where all there were so many new faces at work?
Yeah. Look, I think there was a lot of great stuff at Edelman already. But there was a lot of new stuff that we've brought in, and so I think it's brought a lot of energy to the agency, and it has felt like a reinvention of what the agency was to where we are today.
Now, it's a global agency. It's one of those ones that you always, and I must have done it 3 or 4 times, I've gone to look up which holding group it's part of and then discovered that it's actually independent, which is relatively unusual.
Yeah, so the interesting story about Edelman is it's actually the world's number one PR agency now. It's the largest by billings, but it's owned by the Edelman family. So it's a bit of a quirky one. It's still a family-run business, and it feels like that in some ways.
Now, your brief is digital, and that's something that the agency itself is giving a focus. You've just appointed Melbourne.
Yeah, Alex Leffley down in Melbourne, which is our first dedicated senior digital person down in Melbourne. So he's working across Bendigo Bank and the work we do there for planbig.com.au. He's also working across Savers and some other work we've got in the pipeline too.
And it's interesting that you say digital rather than social media, because I think sometimes, particularly on the PR agency side, people almost use that interchangeably.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. It's one of the things that we've been talking about as well, whether it's digital or whether it's social. I think I don't quite know what the answer is. I think social might be pigeonholing it a little bit too much, but it's a debate we've had whether you want to call it digital or social.
And the realities of what you do, though, more in the social media
space?
Yeah,
most definitely. A lot of the work we're doing is in the social space as opposed to build. We do some build capabilities, and we're doing more of that all the time. And we're actively looking at how we can expand our capabilities in that space as well. But we work with a range of partners very closely. We've also got within our network, we've got a big development team up in Jakarta of a team of about 40, 50 people up there.
And in terms of the business model, how you make money from digital and the social media side of it, I remember talking to someone who, kept pitching in these big ideas to clients on, let's do a social media campaign around such and such. And they always got nervous and pulled back and never used to do it. And then he kind of cracked it and pitched them social media monitoring. It was kind of refocused as actually, rather than helping you take a risk, I'm going to help you do something that reduces a risk, and suddenly they were happy to spend dollars. Are you finding a similar model?
Yeah, look, I think it's different for each client, obviously, and I think it's different as the life cycle of social and investment in that space has evolved. I think what we're finding now is that, a lot of organizations already are doing social work, so it's not necessarily about convincing them to do it. Oftentimes now it's about how can they consolidate it, how can they make sure that their individual social projects or one-offs that they've done in the past can all be brought together and given a real business focus and a more consistent focus.
And Matt, can I ask, which advertisers out there, which clients would you say are doing social media really well?
Yeah, look, that's a really good point. I mean, one of our biggest clients is RIM, and they're doing a lot of work in
BlackBerry,
social.
BlackBerry.
You're right. And they do a lot of work. I mean, if I look outside of my client roster, and I think some of our clients are doing a really good job. We're doing a lot of work with Savers down in Melbourne, as well, which is fun work, and also Clinique in the beauty space. But if I look outside our clients, I think Telstra's doing a good job. I think a lot of the large organisations that are headquartered here or have a very big scale here are starting to do it well. You look at Vodafone. I think Vodafone's starting to do a really good job as well, and Optus increasingly. Yeah. Qantas increasingly, you know, trying lots of different things in that space as well. So I think there's a range of organisations that are doing good stuff. You know, Huggies, which is doing a lot of good stuff in Facebook. We're targeting the mum space there as well. So, yeah, look, there's a range of organisations I'm seeing doing good work.
Yeah. And of the things that perhaps advertisers or clients aren't doing so well, what would they be? Are there sort of big mistakes you see commonly made in social media?
Yeah, look, I think rather than the mistakes, I think the opportunity is for organisations now to be looking at their social media from a broader sense, rather than just basing it within the marketing discipline, thinking about how social could be used across a wide range of their business disciplines, from customer service right through to product development. I think, and the opportunity now in sales, obviously, as well, is how do businesses start to step up the game in social and really start thinking about it as a serious, always-on focus rather than a marketing project or campaign spike.
Which I guess comes to sort of community building, doesn't it? Now, do you think that when it comes to building and maintaining a community, you know, you mentioned the Huggies example, for instance, is that in the long term better done by the client than an agency, do you think?
Yeah, look, I've got an opinion on this, and my opinion is that the community doesn't necessarily care as long as they're getting a great experience. In terms of, I think what you'll start to see is increasingly a head of social media role within organisations. Some organisations will do it in house. Some organisations will do it out of house. As I said, it's horses for courses.
You know, and it almost strikes me that I'm wondering whether one of the roles of agencies is to actually help brands get to the point where they don't need them to do it for them, you know.
Yeah, it's funny that people have been saying, oh, do you think this is going to go in-house and we'll lose our revenue and all of that, and in my experience the more people that start have a role with social media in-house, the more they tend to spend with their agency partners, because they start to realise this does need to be a focus. So I don't think whether, you know, community management and some aspects go in-house, I don't think all social media will all disappear from agency rosters.
And this is one of those questions where I think there can probably only be one answer from where you sit, but the debate about where social media sits, whether it sits within a PR agency or an ad agency or even a media agency, can it sit in more than one place, do you think?
Look, yeah, most certainly. And my opinion on this is that there's no single traditional marketing discipline that does social media best, because it's across all of the areas, from PR, from a conversation and messaging and communication creation standpoint, from media. A lot of social media needs to have a media or a paid component as well. There's obviously build aspects to it, from applications within Facebook or what have you, that the digital agencies do well, and then there's also just great ideas that need to happen, and that's creative. So what I'm seeing is that, you know, all of the disciplines have something they can bring to the table. What you're starting to see now is that the people that are doing it well are bringing all of those disciplines together. So what I'm seeing is not that creative agencies doing it well and media agencies are doing it bad. Starting to see some creative agencies doing it well, some media agencies doing it well, some PR agencies and even some digital agencies.
But I suppose what I would argue is that none of them can, when it comes to something that is more sort of about messaging, the risk they face if they don't involve a PR agency is a lot greater if they don't understand the risk management side of
things. Without a doubt. I think that's a really important component. Risk mitigation and brand reputation is something that PR agencies have always done. That's what we, you know, is always right at the forefront of our mind before we do anything in the social space. And a lot of work before any activation happens is done in the preparing for, you know, mitigating any risk.
Now, I guess the other big thing that we've been writing about Edelman recently is the legal battles with Hill and Knowlton. Yes. All friends again now?
Yeah, look, I think that it's good that that's over and we can move forward. I mean, I can't say too much more than what Michelle's already said, but I think that...
That was Michelle's former employer, was Helen Knowlton.
That's correct, yeah. So, look, it's over and I think that we can both get on with growing our respective businesses now.
Has that had any effect on the sort of culture within the agency? I know you sort of...
Yeah, no, it hasn't actually. We've been updated throughout the process of it. Yeah. And, you know, from my point of view, it's all about business as usual now. And, you know, it hasn't
just getting on with things.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Next, digitally speaking.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan MicroCitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
This week we reported on recruiter Elisa Kreitzer, forgive me if that pronunciation's wrong, switching agencies and laying into those who don't get it. The quote in the press release was, "It's great to be working with people who get it." She moved to her job at Transfer after spending just 3 months at FBI Recruitment, and before that, 7 months as head of digital at ICUR. The release said, "It's difficult being a digital recruiter in a traditional firm. Digital has fundamentally altered the way ad agencies and creative businesses operate. Recruiters need to understand this to be able to introduce the best talent in this challenging environment." So fair to say that the story generated a lot of comments in our comment thread. So Tim, press some buttons. Why do you think this is?
Yeah, it certainly did. And it was one of those releases that as soon as it came in, it wasn't just here's an appointment story. It was that relatively provocative language about, you know, after working with some sort of traditional people, now I'm with the people who get it, which I think because of her other moves, we'd reported on all of those. It was always going to be comment worthy, you know, when a recruiter who obviously looks people have been, you know, had a sort of period of stability in a job, when they themselves move on a few times anyway, that would be comment worthy. But with the provocative comments, you thought, yeah, probably this is going to be interesting. And I think they probably had taken that decision when they wrote the release that they were going to be provocative because it's a way of making a noise in the market, you know. And if you're not a massive agency, then, you know, massive recruitment agency, then it is a way, you know, even if you know you're going to get some negative commentary as well. And, you know, I think there were a number of debates. There was the one on, you know, she seems to have moved through a lot of jobs, but also just this whole debate around do you need to, you know, be a specialist recruitment firm when it comes to digital is a legitimate debate to have. But then I think the other thing was, yes, making the point of having a photo of them toasting it with vintage champagne, which certainly says to me that that there's no problem in the market. So I guess if the recruiters can afford vintage champagne, so I think next time someone is asking for a discount on their 20% or their 15%, whatever it is they ask, then they're not going to be able to plead poverty.
Yeah, but champagne besides, the fact that she is a recruiter and she spent 10 months in two jobs, and then to openly criticise her previous employers for a lack of digital
nous. Yeah, and that's by implication, in fairness, because, right, you know, she's not saying they don't get it. She's saying it's great to be working with people who do get it. So, you know, it was just about courteous, the press release, to previous employers. But, you know, the implication was clearly there, and I was happy to draw that implication.
So, Matt, over to you. Do you think agencies still have a long way to go in hiring digital talent?
I think some do. I think some do. I think some are doing a really good job. I think one of the challenges for agencies at the moment is, where do we draw the line? Is it about developing a bespoke digital team, or is it about, you know, bringing in that digital expertise into the organisation across the board? And I think that there's merits in both. But, look, I think that there's some organisations that are really struggling with it.
Mm. And how about demand in the market at the moment for strong digital people? Is it true, for example, that digital expertise, they cost a lot?
Yeah, I think... What I'm seeing from my point of view and watching the market, and I probably look at it more a little bit more from a PR point of view, but, you know, I watch quite broadly as well. There's a lot of people. It's not uncommon for people that are digital strategists to be moving around a lot at the moment, and I think that that's indicative of the fact that there's not enough people out there. There's probably a lot of high expectations around what these people will be able to bring in, and And perhaps those expectations are too great in too short a period of time, so it's just easier to move on to the next role because there's always plenty of options.
So typically, how long would a digital specialist spend in an agency?
I think that this is something that I've actively been thinking and looking at the moment. I think the longer you can be there, the more effective you're going to be.
Right.
It's just that temptation is there too often to move on. And what I'm seeing is a lot of people are moving after 12 months. That's not uncommon to see.
Is the temptation simply financially driven?
I think that there's a lot of recruiters offering big dollars for people to move on, and it's easy to do that. So
yeah,
that's probably what's happening. But you know, once you've done that two or three times, or even one or two times, you can't keep doing it. And I think that's probably where Alyssa is at the moment. Perhaps that she's made a lot of moves, and where do you sit and settle?
Right. The talent pools seem to be quite small. Mm. Why aren't agencies looking in other areas? I mean, digital expertise isn't just refined to the communications business. Have you guys, for example, thought about looking outside of communications for digital expertise?
Yeah, look, we have. I think that there's two things. I mean, there is digital expertise outside of the marketing business, but what primarily clients are hiring agencies for is for marketing expertise, and it's that first and foremost. Someone that can build something great isn't necessarily going to be helpful for a client.
Now, right. You were client side in the UK for
That's
a
correct.
While.
Yeah.
What do you see as the points of comparison between the digital market in the UK and Australia?
Yeah, this comes up a lot as well. I think there's smart people across both agencies. Hell, we've got enough Brits out here, and there's enough Aussies back there. So I don't think it's that they're so much smarter than us. I think one of the differences is it comes down to budget. The scale of the business over there is just so much more that there's more investment in people, in teams, so you've got more people.
You were at Microsoft.
That's correct.
So you were rolling in money in the UK.
Vast
budget.
Well, look, I don't want to, Microsoft's an interesting business, and it is a big business, but it's not necessarily a business rolling in money. We had a good team. We were doing interesting stuff and working with great agency partners over there. But I don't think that there's any drastic difference between the UK market and Australia in terms of talent.
Next, Nine's fake chopper crosses.
There's more to radio than music for your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan Micro Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au.
Now to Cameron Price in the Nine News chopper near the search site. Cameron, this must be a boost for the searchers there.
Eva, it certainly is. The search has finished for the night in failing light, but it was a hive of activity today with search crews going through the area on their hands and knees in pouring rain, often in lines or small groups. Now, they're searching that western area of swamp that's been the focus in the last 24 hours where they found the second shoe. It's believed that's where the bones were located today. And police aren't ruling out finding more bones when the search resumes at first light tomorrow. Eva?
Now, that was Nine News Queensland's weekend anchor, Eva Milich, in a live cross with Cameron Price. But he wasn't hovering above the scene. He was parked on Nine's helipad.
To another matter now, and an apology from Nine News. In Saturday and Sunday's bulletins, we crossed to our reporter in our helicopter, which we said was near Beerwar. In fact, the helicopter had returned from there and was at Mount Cutha. This network takes its responsibility to accuracy extremely seriously, and we sincerely regret misleading you, and we're totally committed to making sure it never happens again.
Not a good look.
The first one, the fact that they were on the ground with the first chopper cross, I thought, why even bother do it?
Although it was the first one to emerge, that was the Sunday.
It was technically the second one.
It was just the first
cross,
one that got busted.
The first one that got busted, yeah. So the fact that the Sunday cross was on the ground, I thought, does it really enhance the story that much to have someone staring at a camera with headphones on, if in fact they're not even, if they're not above it, why
not just put it in front of a green screen and make someone make what noises instead? Yeah.
Perhaps. I'm not sure about your producing ideas there, Tim, but I think, and especially with the second one coming out, I think the negative press has far outweighed the enhancements that those crosses made to those stories. Mm. They had the footage. I understand that it makes them think, you know, oh, we're live on the scene, but they're not, and they look so much worse for it now. And you'd have to be thinking very hard about the way they do it next time.
I suppose the thing is, because all television is inherently artificial, you know, you go into the Sunrise set and, you know, they're sitting right by Martin Place and you can see the people moving around behind you. But depending where you're sitting in that set, and a couple of setups, it's a video screen from a camera that's a few metres away showing the movements. Or, you know, you cross to somebody sitting in the newsroom, which in fact is, you know, a few metres away. You know, it's kind of TV artifice. It's part of the language of TV that... It isn't actual natural human behaviour. Yet, you know, what point do you cross the line from doing something which, you know, clearly evidence shows makes people watch and engages them, because if it didn't, they wouldn't do it, versus when you're misleading people?
And do you think that had it not been as around as such as a sensitive case as Daniel Morecambe, it wouldn't have copped as much flack?
Yeah, the fact that it seemed like bad taste, didn't it? The fact that, you know, this is a hunt for a child's body. But
yeah.
I suppose it comes to trust, really, doesn't it? Mm.
It struck me as, to be honest, I read the story, well, both stories a couple of times, it struck me as a fairly cosmetic production issue. As you mentioned, it's TV is essentially artificial. I'm not sure that it affected the credibility of Nine, really, as a news-gathering operation that much in the long run. It was just a story that will blow over. I'm not sure that really the trust has been
Matt.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, news is about trust. If I can't trust what you're telling me is right, why am I going to tune in and believe what you're telling me? I hear you on the entertainment component, but and I think there needs to be a difference as well between, say, a variety show or even a morning show like Sunrise and news. It should be about delivering facts about the news. It should be less about entertaining and more about delivering the facts. If you want to build a good long-term news brand, in my opinion.
Yeah, I suppose one thing which I'd be interested to get your PR perspective on is at the point at which we got hold of the first piece of video, which showed the helicopter clearly on the helipad at the time that supposedly it was in the air. The response from Nine at that point was actually had just been forced to return because of bad weather. The producer didn't know. And of course, you know, it was just one of those things was the implication. The fact that then it emerged the next day that actually they'd done precisely the same thing the day before when the weather was fine.
Yes.
What do you think of the PR handling?
From a PR point of view, I think the first rule in PR is transparency. Because you know, more times than not, you'll get found out. Especially now, where everyone's got a camera phone and anybody can tweet anything. Transparency's got to be the number one tenet. And no matter how bad the crisis is, you know, transparency always has to be key. And you know, and I think that you can see examples of where people have tried to cover up, and it makes it just so much worse for them.
It's clear that Nine took it very seriously, and we watched the apology that they broadcast for a very sort of breathy, hesitant newsreader apologising on behalf of Nine. That struck me as obviously they took it very seriously.
And the thing is, it's a bad decision made by a weekend producer in Queensland has reflected on the reputation of a whole network, you know. So it's one of those things. It's very kind of high stakes, I guess, you know. And it actually, for all the criticism of the likes of Current Affair, Today Tonight, the quality of news from Nine and Seven, those two particularly competitive networks, is pretty high.
Yeah.
Next, Breakfast Without Merrick.
Merrick and Dawes, Nova 969, 10 past 8, and we've been saying all morning that we've got an announcement for you. Guys, I've got some news for everyone. There's going to be a change on The Breakfast Show. After 10 years of waking up at 4 a.m, my time has come to an end. Next Friday is our last show on Breakfast. It has been an incredible 10 years that I have spent here working on this Breakfast Show. I have loved it more than you could even imagine. There's so many people that I will thank in a minute, but the Nova guys here have some very exciting news about the new show, which you guys will be informed about soon.
But I've got to thank Nova and I've got to thank DMG for giving me a home and an audience for 10 years and giving me the opportunity to have a lot of fun. And you, Duels, we've had a lot of fun.
Yep.
And to be able to share my life and my jokes with people has been awesome. The Nova staff here are fantastic. One of my favourite things about this job is the people in the building and the people I work with day to day, just having laughs off air and working together as a team, which I love. And I'm very, very grateful to all of them. To you guys, the listeners, my God. on air, I've had a lot of laughs with you guys. I've had a lot of fun. Off air, I've had some of the most amazing experiences. There's a thing about radio, which they say about radio announcers, that they like the idea of meeting their audience and spending time with their listeners, but the reality actually scares them when they come face to face. And somebody once said to me that I'm the opposite of that and that I genuinely do love people and being with them, and I have had some of the best experiences with you guys, the listeners, from, you know, kayaking and jumping out of planes to, you know, playing mini golf with water, fishing, going camping, and I have never in 10 years did I ever have an experience where any single person that we went away with or did anything with ever misbehaved, with the exception of myself, where I was once told to settle down my behaviour. You guys have been fantastic. I love you on air and I love you as much off air. And finally, my wife, Georgie. Without Georgie, there would be no jokes and there'd be no laughter in me. I thank you all, and I thank Georgie the most. It has been a fantastic ride.
That was Merrick Watts confirming that he's moving on from Nova's Sydney breakfast slot. DMG Radio's Nova 969 announced this week that long-time breakfast host Merrick Watts will be moving on from the slot after 10 years on the show. His co-host Scott Dooley will also move on from the slot, clearing the way for a new show, which should have been announced by the time you hear this podcast. The other big programming move is over at ARN, where The Circle's Chrissy Swan and Yumi Steins will be the hosts of a new show called 3pm Pickup, aimed at women in the 25 to 44 age demographic. So, Alice, any thoughts on the shifts?
We were actually just talking about this off air, and I believe Matt has the same kind of feeling. You know, Merrick's been on air for 10 years on that slot, and I remember when Nova first came on air, and I thought, you know, Merrick and Rosso, they were the business, you know, it was so cool. This new Nova channel was awesome. But 10 years later, you know, my radio habits have changed, and I've come in and out, you know, from listening to the breakfast show occasionally, and I think there's just a time that you have to hang up the headphones and say, okay, cool, you know. I think 10 years is a pretty good stint. I don't think he I can't speak for him, but if, you know, I think he shouldn't be too shattered if it wasn't him that made the decision. You know, I wouldn't be ashamed of the move.
Sure. So Tim, you were mentioning also that Merrick's grown up, so have his audience. Do you think that perhaps now is the right time to move on for him?
I mean, it's a tricky one for Nova, because he's a safe pair of hands, you know, sort of tending to bobble around the 5% share or just below. There was lots of speculation before the last set of ratings that there were going to be changes with the breakfast show, which, you know, which has been through a number of changes since Rosso left, you know, so sort of broke up the pairing. And it was almost a problem for them that his ratings, for Merrick and Dills went up last time around. So, you know, it was kind of, if they were waiting to make a decision, it probably didn't make it any easier. A time comes, but, you know, there's no guarantee that whatever follows actually will do better. And looking at, when Nova made the announcement to their, you know, Facebook page, there are a lot of fans are really going to miss that show as well, you know, because there are plenty of people who have built up habit, and habit can be really important as well. So, you know, it is a really tough decision. It's we're going to sound silly speculating on what comes next on the grounds that by the time this podcast goes out, we could be proved completely wrong. Most people seem to expect that it's going to be Fitzy and Whipper, moving from the sort of national drive time into a Sydney breakfast slot. But then, of course, that leaves them, you know, with a national thing. I tell you what, my wild card that I would love to see them try at some point, and I don't think anyone would be quite willing to take the risk, would be Johnny Vaughan from the UK bring him over. Capital Radio. Paul Jackson, program controller at Nova, ex-Capital, knows Johnny Vaughan very well. Johnny Vaughan, Australian wife, good reasons for coming. But I think maybe start off with a weekly podcast to begin with and then go from there. But that would be the great risk-taking one I'd like to see.
But the tone of the formula will stay the same, do you think, Tim? So basically, you know, Merrick, American Deal is about quite loud, comical, lively.
And that's Australian.
I mean, that's Breakfast, though, isn't it? You know, it's sort of that sort of, you know, slightly zoo-ish format. But, of course, and we have seen changes to the formula. You know, no more than two ads in a row went, you know, not much more than a year ago, probably. So, you know, we have seen changes to the format already. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a new lineup, probably a new producer will come across as well, you know. So we'll... You know, inevitably it will have to find its feet, and it will do dreadfully for the first year. Whatever it is, will go down in the ratings. That's always what happens. So it's a long-term play.
Right. Okay. So Matt, over to you. The PR perspective. Do you target the music stations, and if so, how? And which brands would you push on that sort of audience?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the morning, you know, breakfast radio shows are still incredibly powerful. You know, from a PR perspective, getting talked on about on one of those programs is incredibly powerful. I guess from a PR point of view, one of the challenges is that it's getting harder and harder to for any opportunity to get editorial on one of those programs without a paid promotion.
Right.
The promotion slots are just so tied up, and the radio stations are just so savvy around any brand mentions that without a spend, it's incredibly hard, almost impossible, to get any coverage.
Right. Okay. So, do you have any examples of having done that before? Perhaps brand integration on radio.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I've over the times, I've done a lot of work with Xbox in my earlier career, and we've done a range of different things there. But it's basically about getting great talent, so that there's somebody for them to interview. If you've brought over a star from overseas, or you've got a star working for you, I think that's almost always really, really important. I think it's also, if you can create a swell of noise outside of the radio station, so that it's all over the papers. The old Spice guy would be a good example. That's the kind of thing that it's part of the community zeitgeist at that moment, that it's almost impossible for them not to talk about. That's the way to get onto radio without a promotional spend.
Actually, on that, the 3 PM pickup, ARN's new show on Mix, they're actually going to be bringing in, I can't remember what they've actually called it, but it will basically be a product. There'll be a product of the week, and listeners will be selected on their website to blog about that product, their experience with that product. Those reviews will then be collated by the show producer to actually be a segment in the show each week. So commercially, brands can get involved that way, which is an interesting, you know, way to kind of get those brands talked about, because, you know, if they're talking about Handy Ultra paper towel, it's hard to kind of, you know, include that in your everyday conversation about cooking breakfast.
You can edit it into MasterChef easily enough. But, but yeah, actually, no, that's a really good point, though, because it does seem like quite a nice piece of programming, The Circle. You know, getting The Circle guys in, speaking to that sort of, you know, female at-home audience who are, you know, already familiar with The Circle, it seems like a nice tie-in. I mean, it's one of those things, it'll probably get a bit lost below the radar because it's during the day. So, you know, it'll never rate as highly as, sort of, you know, breakfast or drive time.
Yeah.
But I suspect that for the right brands targeting, you know, the main grocery buyers of the house, that's going to be a smart spend.
Yeah, that's right.
And Matt, just on radio again, where does getting a client on radio compare with getting a client on TV or other media? Where does it sort of sit in the spectrum?
Yeah, look, it depends on what the client is and all of that kind of stuff. I think, you know, a lot of the time clients still love a big television splash, whether that's on a current affair or something like that. But, you know, radio's right up there. It's really important.
Next, big numbers, flat finish for The Block.
We saw a fairly anticlimactic final of The Block on Sunday night, but despite the disappointment of having three out of the four houses passed in, it did get a lot of viewers with over 3 million tuning in. Now, 10 will have been hoping that with the absence of the block on 9, you know, once that had finished, that would mean that renovation fans would make the shift to the renovators. And that was almost, it started to feel almost like their last hope for the renovators. But it wasn't anything to write home about for renovators this ratings week, with Monday night's episode, for instance, receiving 611,000, Tuesday's a bit better on just over 800,000. But, you know, still big questions around the renovators. On 7, we saw a strong return for the popular Aussie-made series, Packed to the Rafters, with a very strong 1.81 million, and also the series finale of Winners and Losers with 1.23 million. So they've made really nicely that segue from, you know, Packed to the Rafters runs, then Winners and Losers runs, then Packed to the Rafters runs. So the 7 have kind of nailed that element around the kind of homegrown drama. A few other series returns to mention. Farmer Wants a Wife, that came back for 9 with a healthy 1.16 million, you know, and that was on a quiet night. And of course, for 9, the big one was Underbelly, which scheduled straight after the block, obviously was going to get a big audience, but just over 2.5 million for the first episode, and then staying above 2 million for the second episode, which is a good sign. Despite the fact that there were a lot of ads in Underbelly as well, you know, that was kind of commented on. Matt, I'm not sure how much of a free TV watcher you are.
I do watch a lot of free TV. I tend to watch a lot of the ABC, which might make me a little bit boring. But I have watched all the Underbelly series and watched the first episode. And I guess it was great. The ads were very noticeable. They were very plentiful.
Robin, backlash against the ads?
Well possibly. I'd be interested to see the figures. I mean, just how frequent were they? Was it every 15 minutes? Was it perhaps more frequent? I think, yeah. Did you any notice as to what that frequency was?
My sense was that probably there were slightly fewer ads in the block and slightly more ads, you know, balanced out into Underbelly. But I think the other thing that maybe changed perceptions was it was a double episode of Underbelly. And of course, so, you know, effectively it's two episodes back to back. But to the viewers, it felt like one episode, but with a lot of ads in, because they probably didn't actually notice the amount of time that was going on. So you know, I suspect that there were maybe slightly less than it felt to people, but it did feel like a lot. But of course, you know, there's a reason we call it free TV, and that's because the ads pay for the TV.
Well, and presumably the heavy marketing investment they put behind it has been very heavily marketed. I've noticed some lots of outdoor posters, ads in magazines, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, as you say, it's got to pay for it somehow.
Absolutely. And Alice, I'm just going back to the block. The fact that the ending was a bit flat with, you know, on air at least, only, you know, one house actually sort of being sold. Do you think that will affect next year?
I think it can't do it any harm, to be honest. I think next year people will have that extra, oh, I wonder if they'll sell this year kind of thing. I don't think, while, you know, I watched the finale and was really disappointed that they got passed in, it to me, it was a real anticlimax. But I don't think in terms of next series it will hurt. People will be looking at all the decisions they make and going, oh, that could affect whether it gets sold at the end. I don't think, if I was 9, I'd be worried. But just on the Underbelly thing, I seriously, they have to do something about that this coming week, because that was shocking. It really tarnished it for me, the ads. I know it's free TV and I know they pay for it, but it really left a sour taste in my mouth.
It's a brave format, though, isn't it? You know, for once, not a reality TV show. It's fairly sort of offbeat drama. I personally haven't seen it. All I've experienced it of watching the filming of it somewhere near Abercrombie Street, and rather rudely told to go away as I stuck my camera phone at the actors. But, at least it's not a reality TV show.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how, because 7 have got Wild Boys, which is similar sort of historical format. It'll be interesting to see how that goes too. That is all we have time for today. A big thank you to Edelman's Matthew Gain.
Thank you for having me.
To Robin Hicks.
Cheers, Tim.
And to Alice Telikovsky.
Thanks, everyone.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded in the CBS Interactive Studios. See you next week. Until then, toodle pip. Hello, it's Tim again, back in Mumbrella House now. A couple of postscripts since we recorded today's podcast. Firstly, on Choppergate, 3 sackings and a resignation. Lee Anderson, the news director at 9 News in Queensland, resigned. Melissa Mallett, who was one of those taking part in one of the faked crosses, and Cameron Price, the other, have both been fired, along with a news producer, Aaron Wakeley. So that's one story. The other thing we were talking about was what would be going on at Nova. Well, there is news. As we nodded towards, Fitzy and Whipper are indeed taking the breakfast show in Sydney, and then their drive time slot is being filled by Michelle, Tim and Marty, who are currently at Nova in Brisbane. So for Marty Shergold, that's a return to the certainly being heard in Sydney, and of course nationally as well. So that really is it for now. We will see you next week. In the meantime, have a good week. Toodle pip.